welcome to Hype episode 169. I'm Selena and Pam is here with me for another festive week of entertainment news stories. Get it? Because it's always December. I don't know.
Tis the season.
Tis the season to be hyping.
Do you know the word hype, like, in any variation of it has just, like, I've been brainwashed because we've been doing the show so long. And obviously, hype is a word that exists in the English dictionary. But, like, I feel so much ownership for us for hype and hypeable and, like, all this stuff that we've been a part of for so long. And so anytime somebody says hype or, like, I'm so hyped, I'm like, what?
I'm so hyped.
Are you talking about us? Yes. No, you're not, because you have no idea who I am. But, you know.
I know. It's like there are shops here called like Hype Shop. And I'm like, oh my gosh, merch. And like people, like other podcasts are called Hype as well. Like it's sort of because obviously it was Andrew who came up with it. And it fits Hypeable. I mean, obviously Hype is the name of Hypeable's podcast, but it's also an extremely generic name. So obviously we're not the only ones.
Yeah, of course.
Ours is the best though, everyone. Of course. Don't listen to the others.
But yeah, it's just been coming up a lot and I'll be doing whatever and I'll be listening to whatever I listen, you know, like podcast live streams, whatever. People will be like, I'm so hyped for this. I'm like, what? Yes.
I know.
Me? Selena?
The 2018 word of the year is going to be hype. And then what are we going to do?
That's our word of the year.
Yeah. So our word of every year.
Our word of every year. The word is hype.
Yes. Anyway, I think we have a show to start if we ever get into it. We have a lot, actually a lot of news to get through. And it's been a fairly slow news week, but that's because there's been a couple of really big stories that have taken over everyone's attention. And we're going to be talking about all of it, including, of course, the Avengers trailer, some Star Wars news, some Disney news, some other trailers. There's something about a wedding that I think we're going to have to talk about because it's very cultural / pop cultural. And then we have some TV shows to discuss and a bunch of listener feedback. So it's going to be great. And we hope you enjoy. Before we get into the show, we want to remind you of the contact information so you can get in touch with us about anything we talk about or suggest topics or anything else. You can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter at hypeablehype. You can find us on Hypeable, which is hypeable.com. In the podcast section, you can find us on Instagram at HypeableHype, and you can visit our Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. We also have a Patreon, which is where we share with you a video every week where we talk about something fun, like I did one about Danish Christmas this week. So if you're interested in our traditions, then go check that out. We do weekly bonus discussions, which can be like a special topic or an extended discussion of a topic we talk about. And this week's topic will be more in depth on the Avengers Infinity War trailer. We're going to watch it with you guys and sort of discuss it as we go. So that should be a lot of fun. And our Patreon is all the bonus content is available if you subscribe with $2 every month. So go over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and check it out. All right, so moving into how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. Pam, I'm so jealous, but also very excited to hear about yours.
Yeah, so I've been waiting forever, and I know that sounds really like lame because Selena's still waiting, but
we've got another 6 months left.
I know. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for Lady Bird to release up here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I finally found a little art cinema theater that was showing it, and I was like, yes, I'm going. And so I went to see it last Friday, and oh my gosh, this movie was like, it was so good. It was the dialogue is just so wonderful. It's like, it's quirky, but like not too quirky, and just so relatable on so many levels. It's about a girl who is she kind of like sticks out because she's like artsy and still trying to find her own path. But she's growing up in Sacramento and going to Catholic school. So you get like there's like a lot here. It's like a story of coming of age and also self-discovery. There's a lot of relationships too that you dive into, like friend relationships, boyfriend relationships, family dynamics, mother-daughter relationships, and also the idea of a class system, because she's a girl that she's a scholarship kid going to a private school, and that plays a big factor into how she views herself and like what she is versus what she wishes she could be. The acting is just really great in it. Saoirse Ronan and Beanie Feldstein completely knocked it out of the park, and it was just such an enjoyable watch, and believe the hype, because it's such a lovely, charming movie, and if it's playing near you, I would highly recommend checking it out.
Oh man, it is playing near me in April when it's released in Denmark. It's so frustrating. I really want to see this movie. Sometimes the international release schedules of these productions it's just mm-hmm. absurd, and it's really yeah. frustrating.
Yeah, I know. I had no idea. I was talking to Donia, who writes for Hypeable, and we were talking about Coco, just about something that's coming up with that, and she was like, yeah, it's not coming out here till next year. And I was like, what? And that's yeah. Disney, so I can't even imagine like indie stuff like Lady Bird.
Right, right. But I was just going to say that I think Greta Gerwig is someone who, you know, I've watched her films and I really like her as a filmmaker. Saoirse Ronan is possibly like my favorite celebrity human. Like she is fantastic, and I've thought she was fantastic for I always thought she was fantastic like even before she existed. No. But you know, she was so great in Brooklyn, she was so great in Hannah, she was so great in The Host. Best story of all time.
Atonement. That's the first place.
Atonement, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I mean that was a different era of her life. Like she's just had also that movie. Oh, what was the movie?
Hannah,
the one where the world ended.
Oh.
I said that one. This Is How I Live Now. That is a very, very good movie. Or it's just called How I Live Now. But it's still very good. And she co-stars with someone, some guy, who's also very good, who was in Pride. I don't know, I'm making all these connections in my head. Anyway, it was very good. And she's very good. And when I went to BFI a couple of years ago, I ended up attending like 3 different events with her and doing like 2 separate interviews, and she remembered who I was, and I don't know if she thought I was a stalker but she was very, very nice. And I also saw her once in a shopping mall in Cardiff, but I swear I had no idea she was going to be there. What I'm trying to say is I think she's really good. And because I can't see this movie for like months and months, then I would like my Howie hype this week to be a video from Vanity Fair where Saoirse Ronan teaches you how to brew tea. It's very nice. It was I saw it pop up on my Twitter, and like, it's just very fun little breathing room in this very frustrating and disconcerting time. So yeah,
that sounds like the most calming movie. I mean, it's, like video ever.
Yes, it's so good. It's like such a de-stressor. It's great.
That's great. She also, like, if you want more, and I'm sure you've listened to this too, but Chris Hardwick did an interview with her when she was promoting Brooklyn, and that's listen. Like the best. So it's free. Nerdist podcast. That interview is like so great, and she's charming and relatable, and she's great.
So anyway, yay her, and yay this movie. I'm very glad you liked it. Did you want to give your follow-up review of Coco?
Didn't I talk about this? Well, I went to see it with my grandparents.
You saw the first half.
Yeah, and then last week I reviewed the whole thing.
No, you didn't. Yeah, just the didn't first I? Half.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. It's been so long. Oh, no wonder you kept it on there. That's right. It's, God, the nights and days, they just blend together.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, so Coco was wonderful. I saw it twice, 2.5 if you count the first half that I saw. So I went once with my friends and my brother, and then I went to see it with my grandparents, and I actually found a theater near where they are that was playing it dubbed in Spanish, which was really, really cool. So it was really fun to see it with them that way. Although I feel like perhaps it's so funny because I think that seeing it with them, they appreciated it, and they had a strong emotional reaction to some of the elements and the themes and stuff like that. But for them, because they're from Mexico, like that's their life. So they like in a lot of ways, they still like live that way now. So I think that like a movie like Coco is a little bit maybe more impactful, or maybe not. I don't know. I just kind of felt like it didn't have as much of an impact on them as it did with like some people like me who are Mexican American, like first, second, third, fourth generation that have experienced two sides and are very like in tune with pop culture and never expect their culture to be portrayed in such a lovely way on the big screen. Does that make sense? Like, am I just, you know, and like, so it's like, it's not special, but I think that we reacted to it in two different ways. And so for in that way, it was extremely special to see it with them. And it's been so fun to share reactions with our listeners, not only our listeners, but just like, you know, friends and family that have seen it since it came out here last Wednesday. And yeah, the movie is so beautiful. I was not expecting the big plot twist, but it was so perfect. And like, I'm so in love with it. And also, I just want to give like a little shout out to the music specifically.
Was it Giacchino who did that?
Yeah, he's the composer. But they also have, you know, like all these original songs in it. And I went on Spotify to look for the soundtrack because I wanted to see if they had actually included the versions of the songs in Spanish on the soundtrack, and they have. But then I saw something that made me even more emotional, because this movie has been like an emotional journey for me, and I think for a lot of people like me that are Mexican in some way. And I saw that they have some songs on here that are, they're songs inspired by the story, but they're written by bands and artists that are Latinos themselves. And one of the bands that they picked to do one of these songs is a band called Bronco, and like super traditional, you know, Mexican music. It's not like, I don't think they're as accessible as like Selena, but that meant a lot to me because that just meant a lot to me, because that's like a band that I remember, like that their music was playing in my house growing up, in my grandparents' house and things like that. So it was just like just the attention to detail and stuff like that is still, it still astounds me. And you know, nice. This movie's been out for a week now, and I've been keeping up with it for years, and just, yeah, it's just like, I feel like every day something else comes out about it, and it just like makes my heart swell even more. So it's lovely.
That's great. That's lovely.
10 out of 10 would recommend.
Awesome. I can't wait for it to eventually get here. Moving into the news now, we're gonna start with the biggest story of them all.
one stone to rule them all, if you will.
One bracelet.
Gauntlet? Doesn't he have, it looks like one of those, what are they called? The brass knuckles? That's what it looks like.
Yes, one brass knuckle to rule them all. Anyway, very bling.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but all this to say that after months and months and months of waiting, the first trailer for Avengers Infinity War is finally here. This trailer, there's a lot to unpack, which is why we've decided to dedicate our Patreon discussion this week to taking a deep, deep, deep dive into the Infinity War trailer. But there is still a lot for us to talk about here on the regular show. The trailer does a really good job of kind of giving everybody, all of our main players, like a little bit of airtime, which is really impressive considering how many people are in this frigging movie. We get everybody from the Avengers to Doctor Strange to the Guardians of the Galaxy right towards the end. And it's just like, there's so much here. We also get our first look at Thanos, which is poised to be probably the strongest villain they'll ever have to face off against, which is why they all need to work together to figure out how to stop him before he takes over the world. The official synopsis for this movie reads, as the Avengers and their allies have continued to protect the world from threats too large for any one hero to handle, a new danger has emerged from the cosmic shadows, Thanos, a despot of intergalactic infamy. His goal is to collect all six Infinity Stones, artifacts of unimaginable power, and use them to inflict his twisted will on all of reality. Everything the Avengers have fought for has led up to this moment. The fate of the Earth and its existence itself has never been more uncertain. So it's not going to be easy. Also, I forgot to mention that we get this really great look of T'Challa and the rest of the Wakandians in this trailer too, which is really fun because, you know, Black Panther is coming up. Everybody's super hyped for that. So it's always really fun to see a little bit more of them. And it's kind of crazy that we're seeing promotion for Black Panther, like both in Infinity War and on its own.
I know, because, I was going to say.
Yeah, they're kind of like coexisting.
It's almost like a spoiler for Black Panther in a way.
Because yeah,
we know,
a bit.
Like, not that we didn't know that he was going to survive, obviously, but just seeing him and he's like there and his people are there and Stephen Bucky are there, you know, it's very interesting and definitely fun. And it's great to see them integrated so much in this. I mean, we've talked before about how slow Marvel has been to be more diverse. And clearly now they have Black Panther. It's their one movie not led by a white person. And at least they're letting him take up a lot of space.
Yeah. I think that you kind of hinted on them and I didn't reference them in my little mini haphazard recap, but Cap and Bucky, it was really cool to see them because even though we all knew they were going to come back with Civil War, it was very uncertain since they were kind of veering away from the Avengers.
Bucky was put on ice.
Yeah. And now he's
Cap
back and
laid down
Cap
his shield,
has a beard. So he's seen some things, you guys. No more Mr. Nice Cap. He's like... He's legit now.
Yes, yes. He has his grief beard. We know this. Bellamy has one on the 100. It's a whole thing. Yeah, no, for sure. I am definitely, out of all of these characters that we're seeing, you know, that there's literally like two things I care about. One is that they have some kind of scene that pairs up the women because, you know, having watched the Arrowverse crossover I'm going to talk about later in the show, one of the things they did really well was they paired up some interesting combinations of characters, and they did do some great female pairings or pair-ups, I should say, throughout the episode that sort of shows, even though the Arrowverse is primarily male-dominated, they do have a lot of strong female characters in it, which is wonderful to see them get to shine together. And having watched that like 2 days before getting to see this trailer, that was like the thing that came to mind. I was like, okay, so we have to have Black Widow and Scarlet Witch and the Wakanda women and the Guardians women, you know, just give them Sharon Carter if she's in this, just put them all in a scene together. And then the second thing is obviously Steve and Bucky, because I think they are the two most interesting characters. And I think they are the two characters that feel like they have the most emotional stake. You know, we're speculating that someone is going to die, and it's probably going to be Cap, and then is Bucky going to be the new Captain America, or is he also going to die? There's also the question of how they're going to integrate them into this movie, because they as you said, they both left at the end of Civil War, and, you know, likely the tie-in will be Black Panther. You know, there will be some kind of post-credit scene or something that brings them back so that they're ready to go for Avengers, I assume. I hope, anyway.
Yeah, especially since it looks like
they're all fighting
together. Well, yeah, but Chala also says, and you need to get this guy a shield.
Right.
So they've clearly crossed paths, and I didn't even think about that, but yes.
Like Bucky is there. Bucky is on ice there, but then how does he get out of the ice? Like, what's the reason they bring Bucky out of the ice? And then that has to have something to do with Chala, because he is in Wakanda right now.
And there's so much backstory that we're going to need to get into. I don't know how they're going to fit this all into one movie and still find time to set up and defeat Thanos.
Right. And I don't know, because that's the thing about Civil War that was so incredibly frustrating to me and to a lot of like actual Marvel fans, that it was so scattered, and that, you know, Iron Man, it wasn't Iron Man's film, but it might as well have been, because it was so much about him, and so much of Cap kind of got dropped because there were so many characters and fight scenes and all of that to get through, that the plot was kind of all over the place, and the characterization remained a very shallow for a lot of the characters. And I really think, you know, looking back on the first Avengers, which is still, sorry, it's still one of my favorites of the Marvel. I think it's one of the most successful that they've done. And that managed to give all of the characters like proper introductions. They had some emotional connections or comical connections. They all had relationships to each other. But there were only like 7 of them. And here there's like 25. So considering how disjointed Civil War was, I think, you know, in terms of expectations for this one, I'm not expecting like the ones that happen to be my personal favorites will be the ones that they won't have the kind of depth and time that I expect them to have. But hopefully the overall cohesiveness of the piece will be intact, because that was the biggest problem with Civil War, was that it didn't really fit together. And I imagine that, well, it's still the Russo brothers, so who knows? But I don't know. You get what I'm trying to say, right?
Like, yeah, of course.
I don't necessarily have huge expectations, but I'm ready. I'm ready to be positively surprised.
Mm, yeah. Well, we'll see what happens on May 4th, 2018, when Avengers Infinity War hits theaters. Probably not in Denmark, but definitely in the United States.
The positive thing about us, sort of our release schedule being different, is that actually these big ones we usually get a few days early.
Oh, that's so right. Like,
I'm watching Star Wars on the 13th.
What?
Oh, yeah. I'll try not to post the whole plot on Twitter.
Three days before?
Yes.
Man. Look, I'm just saying, no room for complaints anymore.
Well... Star Wars, Lady Bird, I mean. Oh my gosh. Anyway, speaking of stars and wars, we have some great news. The Last Jedi, you know that movie that I'm seeing on the 13th, it is going to be the longest Star Wars movie yet. It is actually, it's pretty amazing. The movie is a total of 152 minutes. So that's over 2.5 hours long, which is practically like a full evening feature. And it's more than 10 minutes longer than the previously longest Star Wars film, which was Attack of the Clones, which I remember as being very long, actually, like seeing it in cinemas. But I was only like 13 or something, so maybe that was why. But so, yeah, it's going to be really long. Like, by comparison, in this article, I posted Fellowship of the Ring, which was 178 minutes. And that was like really long, and they paused the movie in the middle of the screening to let people go to the bathroom and like get snacks and stuff. So I doubt they're going to do that for this one, because they've like cinemas kind of have stopped doing that, at least over here. But still, like an hour and 52 minutes of Star Wars is pretty great. I'm very excited. I would much rather have like an extra 15 minutes and then allow it to breathe, as opposed to them like just rushing through, you know?
Yeah.
Again, there's a lot of plot to get through and a lot of characters to service.
Yeah, I'm into it. I mean, like, it's an hour and 52. And that's all it is, an hour and 52 minutes?
2 hours and 30-something minutes.
No, I mean, like, that's you know, I think that that's perfectly fine with, like, with epic movies like this. And they know that people that go see Star Wars, like, they want to see more plot. So which is so funny, because like in contrast, although I didn't talk about it on the show, like Justice League was very, very short, which is, it was kind of interesting that they decided to do that. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's, yeah, I don't think that fans are going to be complaining. And I feel
given
the pacing of the last few, the last two new Star Wars movies, I'm sure that they know what they're going to use that extra time for, and that it'll make sense in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking, like, obviously there's absolutely no confirmation of this. This could literally just be, because clearly Rian Johnson gets whatever he wants, right? So he probably just asks for another 15 minutes and a hashtag. But I'm hopeful maybe that, because they did this movie, they planned it out, they wrote it, and then obviously Carrie Fisher passed away, right? So maybe they extended the runtime to include a goodbye to her. You know, like, it's not necessarily that that's what it is. You know, it's not like we're going to get 15 more minutes of Princess Leia, or General Leia, excuse me, saying goodbye. But it could be that they just needed that extra time, and they couldn't cut any of the rest of the plot away to give her a proper send-off, you know? Who knows? I'm hopeful.
Yeah. I think that that's a huge responsibility, and they know that, so... We'll see what happens, but I feel I feel like them knowing that, and her being such an integral part of the family, and like also so many people from the original Star Wars like being involved in this new project, this like new chapter of Star Wars history, like there's no way they couldn't do it justice with all those people involved. And then Billy Lord's also in this too, isn't she?
Yeah.
So,
which she was in the last one, but like in a tiny role.
Yeah, but she has like a bigger like speaking role. Right,
I don't know,
like not super big, but like I think she's got a few lines. Well, I guess we'll see in two weeks for me ish
Yes,
we have a little bit more Disney news. This is really exciting. Mulan, the live action Mulan, is coming whether you like it or not, and Disney has finally announced who will be playing the titular character. They've actually tapped Chinese actress Liu Yifei, and I'm so sorry if I mispronounced that. I was trying to figure out how to do it before the show and was not fruitful with my search efforts, but everybody seems to be really excited about this. She's very, very beloved in China, where she is a huge, huge star. She's been in movies such as The Four. And Disney also announced during their statement that where they announced that Liu was going to be joining the cast, that they're actually going to be announcing more cast members very soon. So it sounds like we're going to be getting a full-blown cast over the course of the next, you know, month or so. So that's really exciting. Even more exciting is that, as this article points out, Selena wrote a article.
This is clearly the high point of this.
Well, I figured I should congratulate you, you know, officially, because you wrote this article about Chinese actresses that would be perfect for Mulan, and she was one of your picks.
She was. Right when they announced that they were looking for a Chinese actress, I made a list of like 7 different actresses, and she was on there. And I said at the time that, like, she is one of China's absolute biggest action stars. And she was a pretty obvious bet, particularly if Disney wanted to tap into the Chinese market. And it seems like that's what they're doing. And I think, you know, obviously it's very exciting that they've cast a Chinese actress, and we wouldn't expect anything less. But I also think, you know, it speaks in this movie's favor, too, that Disney is courting China way more than practically any other foreign market. So they're already sort of, you see it in other movies, that they are including Chinese talent, which is good because it's diversity, but they are doing it from a business perspective as well, because it helps the movies do well in China. And so this decision, obviously I wasn't like, this is for sure going to happen, but at the time it seemed like a very logical decision, because she might not be known in the US yet, but she's certainly known in China, and this movie is going to be hugely successful over there. And they also obviously avoid like whitewashing or casting like someone who is not, would not be appropriate to play Mulan in the role. So it's kind of like a win-win for everybody, honestly. And just judged on, I haven't seen any of the movies that she's been in, but just judged on the clips that I've seen and everything, and the fact that she's such a huge star, this is such a good choice. This is going to be great. Even though there's no singing in this movie, which still upsets me, this is a good sign. I think this is going to be a really solid adaptation, and it's going to make a ton of money. So
they said, though, that they would be incorporating music, because they kind of backpedaled a little bit. Originally, they were like, no music. And then they were like, no, we got to include some music. But I don't know. Okay. I don't think it's going to be like a Beauty and the Beast situation, which is unfortunate. But,
well, or fortunate.
Or fortunate. Depending on who else they cast. Fortunate. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that auto-tune still haunts me. But anyway, this is great. Great news. And when does it come out?
It's slated to hit theaters in 2019. There's no like actual release date.
Okay, so moving on, we've got another trailer to talk about that we're all very, very excited for. The popular LGBT novel by Becky Albertalli, called Simon and the Homo Sapiens Agenda, is getting a movie adaptation, and the first trailer is out, and it is perfect. It is actually directed by Arrowverse mastermind Greg Berlanti, funnily enough. Nick Robinson plays the lead role, and based on this trailer alone, this just looks, you know, it reminds me a lot of The Perks of Being a Wallflower movie that came out, which I also thought was really good and really heartfelt. It just has a really good sort of teen movie vibe, but with avoiding the cliche or awkwardness or like cringeworthiness. Now, I have not read this book, but I'm planning to. And actually, I might get the audiobook soon and start listening to it, because I don't think you've read it either, right?
I actually have read it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is one of my favorite books of last year. I loved this book so much. I talked about it on Hype too, but it was a while ago because I read it.
I thought it was Marilyn.
Well, it is. She's the one that recommended it to me, and she recommended it to everybody else as well. So I can't take credit for being like the first person to mention it on Hype. But yeah, no, this book is so, so wonderful. And I love, in general, Becky Albertalli as a writer. My favorite thing about her is how normalized she makes her gay and lesbian characters, because her book, The Opposite of Unrequited, which is also amazing, it focuses on two sisters, one of whom happens to be a lesbian. And it's just like, I don't know, everything is just so like, it is what it is. And it's not like this big to do. And the thing about Love, Simon is like, you know, which he says in the trailer, Simon says, like, why are the gays the only ones that have to like come out? How come like heterosexuals don't have to come out?
That was a really funny part of the trailer.
And so like that kind of like is like a testament to the normalcy of like of how she presents her characters that do happen to be different. It's just like they are what they are. But I love that he kind of is questioning that in the trailer, because a lot of this book deals with self-discovery. And I would like to read it again because it's not super fresh in my mind. But I will say that the tone of the trailer reminds me a lot of the tone of the book. And that makes me really excited for the movie.
Yeah, I'm so excited. Like, I know that there's some kind of twist that you have to, like, read the book before the promo stuff spoils it for you. So that's, like, one of the reasons why I really want to get it read. And this trailer, like, again, like I said, I can only praise it. Like, it got me so hyped for this. Hyped for this movie. I also wanted to point out a funny little thing that has nothing really to do with it. I just really, it really tickled me. The book is called Simon and the Homo Sapiens Agenda. The movie is called Love, Simon. So like Love, comma Simon, which is really funny because one of my actual favorite books, which is called Where Rainbows End, that movie adaptation is called Love, Rosie. So I have like read that book of the same kind.
And actually in it's called Love, Rosie in America too, that book.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not a total thing. No. But still it's a funny thing that like now we have Love, Rosie and Love, Simon.
Yeah, yeah. That's the first thing I thought of too when they decided to change the name. Although it does fit because he is writing letters to somebody.
Yeah, right. He met, right,
so
yeah.
They just don't know who each other are.
Mm. It's a cute title, too.
Yeah.
It's just not totally original, but
I'm so excited for you to read the book. And then if you want more, I highly recommend The Opposite of Unrequited, because equally as wonderful. And and some of the characters in Simon also make a cameo in that. So.
Mm. Well, now I know why I haven't read it yet, because when I looked it up during my audiobook phase, it wasn't on Audible in the UK. So I will have to read it the old regular way. I'm excited though. Very, very cool. Very cool. And everyone should go check out this trailer. If you have any like doubts about whether like you're going to like this movie, then I think the trailer will seal the deal for you. It is very good. Oh God, there's such noise outside.
Oh no.
Sorry if you can hear that.
I can't.
They're building balconies in the building next door. Oh. So lights and noise and...
I also have you pretty low, though, so that your voice doesn't register on my headphones, hopefully. So
okay.
Maybe I can't hear, like, the ambient
noise. So it's just
noise.
The listeners that have to listen to
hopefully
it.
Hopefully not. It's a good thing we didn't record yesterday, because PG&E, it's our, like, electric company, was drilling the house next door from mine. Because I guess there's some kind of, like, danger to the power lines and stuff. And that was, like, it was making the foundation in my house vibrate, and I didn't realize they were doing it, and I woke up because I thought there was like an earthquake happening.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. They had to drill through cement. So I guess that's why it came out all crazy. Anyway, well, we have another story for you guys. Wedding bells are officially ringing for Prince Harry and actress Meghan Markle, who we all know and love from Suits. She plays Rachel Zane on there. And unfortunately, actually, she announced today that she's leaving the series because she's ready to embark on a new chapter in her life, which will involve...
Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, marrying Prince Harry and just attending to all of the duties that come with being a part of the royal family in the UK. They've been dating for a while, so everybody was kind of speculating whether or not he would propose, and he finally did it, and they're just like the cutest couple ever. And this story probably warms your heart if you're like me and you're like secretly a hopeless romantic but also like slightly fascinated by the royal family. So yeah, it was really nice that they have this really cute little 20-minute interview, and like they're just like so clearly in love with each other, and they clearly have, like, from what we can see, you know, from what they have shared with the public, they have a lot of the same core values. They're both really into philanthropy and just doing good for other people. And she's so poised and wonderful, and I'm really excited to see what they do together, because regardless of whether or not you believe in the monarchy, the best thing about, you know, people like Prince Harry and Prince William and Kate Middleton and things like that is that they have a platform, and these boys have inherited so much from Princess Diana, who was really big on philanthropy when she was alive, and they're doing so much good in the world and raising so much awareness for really important issues. And so how can you not respect people like that a little bit? Like, even if they don't have a lot of, like, governmental power, they're doing something good with their titles. And that's really, really heartwarming when you think about all of the bad that's going on in the world, that they're trying to do some good. So,
right.
That's all I have to say about that.
And that's the interesting thing about the monarchy in general. We have a monarchy too. I don't know if everyone's aware. Denmark has a monarchy too. And it's the same kind of conversations that we're always having, being like, well, you know, the monarchy is obviously an outdated political institution. It doesn't have any power. It's a figurehead organization. It's costing a lot of money, and it's you know, upholding maybe not so much ours, but definitely Britain's, maybe is upholding some values that are maybe socially outdated. However, I've always been a little bit, like, ambivalent towards the monarchy, because I do think that while there is, like, obviously concerns and issues to be raised, I also think, like, at least where our monarchy is concerned, and Britain's as well, it's a big part of our country's history. It's a tourist attraction. It's it maybe can transform into something that can uphold more modern values, and that can be a positive figurehead. And I think that what we're seeing slowly is that these modern royal families are becoming more normal, as it were, you know, and like you said, a lot of them are doing really good things. A lot of them have regular jobs. A lot of them spend a lot of their time and effort being trustees of different things. Queen Nora of Jordan was the protector of the school that I went to in Norway, and she came up to visit us a bunch of times. And I think people are too quick to sort of dismiss the potential in future. And I think sort of a very roundabout way of getting here is that when you see someone like Prince Harry, obviously marry a Meghan Markle, I don't want to make it a big issue about the fact that she's biracial, because, you know, that shouldn't be an issue, but it should be said, because she is the first woman of color to marry into the British royal family, at least in recent history. So that's great. You know, in 1995, one of our princes married a woman from Hong Kong, and people were, like, scandalized for 5 minutes, and then they got over it, and now it's not a thing. And, you know, it's seeing the people's reactions to Meghan Markle joining the royal family is wonderful. It's just another sign. And he's marrying for love, obviously. He's not marrying anyone who has any kind of a title. Although, I do want to remind me to or you can bring it up, the very funny connection that she actually has to the British royal family through her own lineage. So I think it's great all around. I think it's wonderful. I loved her on Fringe as well, so I'm a big fan. And, you know, it was just great to see people get excited. I don't think there's anything wrong with allowing yourself to get a little bit excited about this. And I saw Theresa May out saying, oh, the Brits shouldn't get a bank holiday for this. The joy of seeing a happy couple will be enough. Like, screw that. Give them a holiday. Come on.
Give them a TV special. I want to see the big wedding, okay? I want to tweet along with all of the other royal enthusiasts. Just, like, let us live our lives.
Yeah.
What a bitter lady.
I know. Well, she is in general not the best person. True. Talk about your backwards politics, Jesus. But anyway, that's not what this is about. No, I just wanted to bring up, I was writing up this article for Hypable, and I found all this information, and I just thought it was hilarious. Meghan Markle, she has British heritage as well. And, like, way, 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 way back in the 1100th, she's a descendant of King John of England. So that's hilarious. her ancestor, Lord Hussey, the first Baron of Hussey of Sleaford, was beheaded by King Henry VIII. And Markle herself is a very distant relative of Prince Harry because they actually have shared ancestors in the 1500s. So it's a small world after all.
Well, they're actually going to...
I found that delightful.
They're going to tie the knot very soon, so I guess we won't have to wait long to find out how big this royal affair is actually going to be in terms of, like, the wedding and the festivities and things like that. They're going to be married in the spring of 2018, so...
And they've said they're not going to invite Trump, which can we just...
Great.
Like,
perfect. That's the cherry on the cake.
Yeah.
You have this super awesome girl, and they're going to go off and, like, do great things in the world, and they're going to have this... beautiful wedding, and they're not going to invite the Trumps. That's great.
Great news all around.
I'm excited for this. Also, just as a bit of a side note, if you are like royally hyped for the impending nuptials, Sonia, who is amazing and also writes for Hypeable and helps out a lot behind the scenes, she actually just put up an article where she listed off some of her favorite royal reads. So...
Oh, great.
There's there's a lot of, like, there's some YA, there's some new adult, there's some contemporary, there's some sci-fi stuff. There are a few things, too, that we've read on there, like the Selection series, which also has to do with a monarchy. Two of my favorites are on there, too, The Royal We, which is amazing. It, like, loosely follows, like, it's very much loosely inspired by William and Kate's love story. So that's great if you want to read something that's going to be very reminiscent of, you know, past royal wedding stuff. And then also The Heir and the Spare by Emily Albright, which deals with a girl that falls in love, American girl that falls in love with the second prince in line for the throne. So, yeah, there you go.
Oh, that's very, very similar.
Yeah, there you go. So you can continue the royal hype.
And we can't forget the student prince.
Oh, that's right. Yes, the student prince, our favorite not book. That should be a book.
Yep. No, yeah, this is great. And guys, whatever you do, if you watch The Prince and Me, please don't believe that crap about my country. That's the most ridiculous thing. I kept thinking, you know.
But do watch A Princess for Christmas with our favorite Katie McGraw.
That's wonderful.
And Outlander Sam Heughan.
Oh, well, there you go. No, I was just going to say when Julia Stiles is like, Denmark is not ready for a queen like me. It's like, excuse you. It's you who isn't ready, stupid woman. I hate that movie. I'm done. Okay, so moving on. Warner Brothers has... Actually, this is a topic that we brought up. We haven't talked about this on the main show because we want to keep this a relatively positive safe space. So we've tried to stay away from the big abuse stories and stuff like that, but it's not that we haven't wanted to talk about them. It's that we were looking for a proper way to do it. So last week we actually released a bonus discussion on our Patreon where we delved into it and we broke down some of the biggest accusations against the people in Hollywood that have been accused of abuse or harassment. And one of those people was Andrew Kreisberg, who is one of the leading people in the Arrowverse over on the CW. So there's an update to this, which is positive. So we're going to share it on the main show, which is that Warner Brothers has fired Kreisberg now. And this came a couple of weeks after the official announcement or the first reports were made. Warner Brothers said in a statement, "After a thorough investigation, Warner Brothers Television Group has terminated Andrew Kreisberg's employment, effective immediately. Greg Berlanti will assume additional responsibilities on both The Flash, where he will work closely with executive producer/co-runner Todd Helbing, and Supergirl, where he will work closely with executive producers/showrunners Robert Rauner and Jessica Queller. We remain committed to providing a safe working environment for our employees and everyone involved in our productions." So this is wonderful. I should mention Berlanti and Sarah Schechter also released a statement where they said, "We encouraged and supported this investigation. We believe and support the individuals who came forward, and we agree with the studio's decision. Nothing is more important to us than the safety and well-being of all our colleagues, co-workers, crew, and staff alike." So this is great. This is great news. And we can't sort of ignore the timing. You know, obviously they waited to announce this until the Arrowverse crossover had aired, you know, which makes sense. They don't want to overshadow that event. And I don't, you know, that I think that's understandable. But he has been let go now. And the Arrowverse, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I presume that, I mean, Supergirl especially has been, you know, handed from showrunner to showrunner since its inception and from network to network. And I think we can all agree that it has suffered for it. I would love to see it under more permanent leadership. I would love to see a female showrunner. I would love to see some of the baffling story choices that they've made be rectified. And I would love to come back to the show and watch it, because I stopped, but I'm not like opposed to picking it back up again. And I would love to see this, you know, it Supergirl become the, more than any of the other shows, Supergirl had the potential to be the, you know, benchmark female-led show for a new generation. It had the potential to be, you know, the sort of a I'm looking for the right word, like the lighthouse, not the right word, but you know what I mean, you know, a leading show, a like Buffy was, hope. A beacon, yeah, like Buffy was, like Xena was, and it hasn't been that, and that's a shame. And I know that I'm not trying to like conflate these two issues, but I'm just saying that maybe that is one of the positive things that will come out of it. The most positive thing is that he has been let go and that the people working on these shows will hopefully feel safe again, which is what we want.
Right. Yeah, no, totally. I think that, you know, regardless of who you are, I saw this really interesting tweet because like these, the fallout of sexual harassment and all kinds of harassment is, it's still going strong. There are a few other names that were that have been released over the last few days, even, or since we did our little bonus special on breaking down all of the allegations that have come out via the media. But, you know, it's like everybody deserves to feel safe in their workspace, because you spend almost as much time there as you do at home. And it doesn't matter if you're, you know, top tier actress, or you're somebody just starting out, or you work in retail or in the food industry or anything like that. Like, everybody deserves to feel safe and doesn't deserve any kind of abuse. So it's great to see that the CW has made the right decision for their cast going forward.
Yeah, for sure.
We have one little last piece of news here that we wanted to squeeze in. Darren Criss, who we all know and love from Glee and a Harry Potter musical and like everything else he's ever been in, he announced last night actually that he is going to be releasing an EP called Homework, and it's actually coming out pretty soon. It's set to drop on December 15th, so we just wanted to make you guys aware that there's new music coming from Darren. Even though he's super busy with all of his acting projects and things like that, he still found time to write some new original music. He also went into detail in this press release that he, his people put out about the upcoming EP, that he thought that Homework was a really great name for the collection of songs, because not only was it recorded mostly in his house or in houses of friends, but it's a very homegrown collection of songs, and it's really him going back to his roots. I think actually, Selena, he released one of these songs in the form of a music video called I Don't Mind, and I think this is going to be right up your alley, because it's very acoustic heavy, it's very stripped back, there's a lot of guitar and strings and piano, and it's very like low tempo, and I know that that's kind of like the stuff that you tend to gravitate towards, so
unless I'm hula hooping, then it's high tempo,
but yeah, so if you're looking for something like that, you might want to check this out, and definitely head over to Hypeable, where we've embedded his new music video into the post that we wrote up on this. And he also wrote like this really nice little message about the EP as well, thanking all of the fans and his friends and his family for waiting so long, because it's been a while since he put out solo music. Of course, he's like performed and stuff like that, and he had his little side project with his brother, Computer Games, but We haven't gotten original music from Darren Criss on his own for quite a while. So it should be really fun to get a hold of this when it drops. And once again, that EP comes out on December 15th if you're interested.
I am so excited. I love Darren Criss, and I have ever since Star Kid, and obviously discovering him through Harry Potter musical, like most people. And I love his voice. I love his music. And I went sort of through all of their musicals, you know, all their productions that they had uploaded. And I was very into his early music, you know, the EP he released called Human 7 years ago. I really, really enjoyed that. There were some great music on there. Sammy obviously is the one that recurs. Like, it was Harry as well. And it was like, I think it was in one of their other productions as well. The one called Don't You is very good. It's probably my favorite off the album. And then obviously Not Alone, which also features in a very Potter musical. I think he has a wonderful, he's a very good songwriter. I think he does some really nice things with the rhymes and lyrics and stuff that I think is great. And obviously he went mainstream, and that was like in Glee, and that was great. That was fine. Good for him. I'm happy for him. But this is wonderful news. I can't wait. Yay. Nice little Christmas present for us.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I would love to chat with him one day. Like, yeah, he's on my list, especially since I feel like we have like this unspoken connection, me and Darren, because we're both from San Francisco. And I would just love to know like about how his like growing up in that atmosphere has, you know, shaped him into the person he is today. So, yeah, if anybody listening knows Darren personally, you just give him our email and we'll get back to him.
Yeah, sure. We'll feature him on the show. I'm sure he'll want to promote his new EP.
Just like this tiny little artist no one's ever heard of named Darren Criss.
Yep. All right, so that brings us to the end of the news. We're going to move into TV show of the week now. And I just want to start by talking about Crisis on Earth X, because that's, you know, the big Arrowverse four-part special that aired this past week and that we were just kind of ish talking about. I watched it because I was like, first of all, because I said I would, but also because I was on the, you know, checking out some stuff for a certain other show that I tend to write about. And, you know, I saw that the episodes were available to watch. So I watched them actually like a day before they aired, which was hard, it turned out, because something really traumatic happened and I had no one to cry with. My goodness, like you check back into the Arrowverse for like 5 seconds and you're sobbing for 20 minutes. I really thought it was good. I know that there have been some issues raised by the fans. I should preface this by saying that I'm not really an Arrowverse fan. I check in and out of the shows every once in a while, and I've sort of resorted to just watching the specials. But I think that the character team-ups they chose, like I kind of talked about earlier too, were very well done. You know, Alex and Sarah is like the obvious one that we have to mention. Like that one was fantastic. They had a lot of good scenes, and they had a lot of nuance in their scenes. They, you know, they were kicking ass together and working through their issues together, and I think it was extremely well done. And I wish they were on the same show, but at least we had this. That was wonderful. You know, even Felicity and Iris got to have some fun team ups. And you know, the Nazi thing, you know, the Nazi the elephant in the room, like it was super cringe and super bad timing to release a story about Nazis. But I think, you know, I kind of said this last week too, that it is sort of like the standard ultimate evil villain. And it's not like, I mean, obviously there were evil versions of the heroes, and they were sort of allowed. We did get to see their motivations and stuff, but I don't think there was ever a question where I was thinking, I wonder if the Arrowverse is normalizing being a Nazi. Like I don't think they did that ever. So for that part, it was super cringe to like see them do the hand signal and stuff. But yeah, that's what it is. They were enemies, and that's what those enemies do. And yeah, the shocking twist was devastating, and I'm never gonna like forgive them for doing that to us. And I did have like my only real issues with it, because I was very, very intrigued like through the whole thing. There was obviously, and again, I'm speaking from a total outsider's perspective, but I feel like the Oliver Felicity thing for me, like she had a very great sort of line early on in the episode where she was like, you know, I don't want to get married. Please respect me on this. And I was like, wow, that's so mature and progressive and wonderful, because Barry and Iris are getting married and marriage doesn't have to be the be all end all destination for couples in TV shows. I feel like that's often what they fall back on. But, you know, lo and behold, by the end of the episode, she was like, let's get married. And I was like, but didn't you just, you know, like, why is this show sort of forcing her down this path when, like, 2 hours ago she said she didn't want to? That didn't sit well with me. But I guess there's the fans are happy and that's fine. I'm personally not a huge fan of like the marriage seal that shows give relationships. And that end scene where she like basically stole Iris's thunder was like pretty weird. But other than that, those are like minor issues. I also have questions if anyone out there has the answers to these. A, why was there no evil version of the Flash? B, was that girl from Secret Circle towards the beginning Barry and Iris's daughter? And C, how come if there are like 50-ish different Earths that each have a version of the characters on them, how come the Arrow and Flash characters are on one Earth, Supergirl is on a different Earth, but both Supergirl and Arrow and the Flash are all on Earth X together? That didn't make sense to me. Other than that, I'm good. So I know Pam hasn't watched it yet, so I don't want to get like super specific on anything, but I liked it and I'm glad I watched all four. And I would not have done that if I hadn't also been looking, like I had to watch them because I was actually, I thought that there might be like a The 100 trailer embedded in there. There was not, but that was part of my motivation. But I'm glad it gave me a reason to blow through it because it was great. Okay, you go.
Oh, mine's just really, really quick. I know that Mindhunter had gotten a lot of buzz the last few months, but I wasn't really in the right mind frame to actually watch it. But I started watching the first episode. I watched the first two episodes yesterday, and I really, really like it. I can see why people have gotten sucked into this. For those of you guys that don't know, it's set in 1977, and it takes place in the early days of criminal psychology and criminal profiling at the FBI. And it tells the story of two agents, one of whom is played by Jonathan Groff, who work with a psychologist to interview imprisoned serial killers in order to figure out how they think, in the hopes that they'll be able to apply that to ongoing cases of murder and things like that. So it's super, super heavy. Maybe not good for those of you that like cheer and good times for the holidays, but it's super fascinating and I can't wait to watch more.
Oh, cool. Glad to hear it. I've heard good things. I also just briefly wanted to mention, I guess I'll save a more in-depth review. Maybe we can do a special on this when you've seen it. But The Crown Season 2 is coming to Netflix very soon, and I'm panicking because I still haven't written my review. But I've seen it. And, you know, since the embargo is up, I figured I would talk a little bit about it on the show. So there's at least like a little bit of a review. It's beautiful. The Crown is just a gorgeous show. And Season 2 is even better. Like, I don't think I've ever, like, aside from, ironically enough, The Handmaid's Tale, I've never been as, like, obsessed with the set design as I was for this show. Like, it is gorgeous. Like, those, oh my God, those palaces, man. And the way that they, I mean, obviously, I don't know how much it resembles the actual apartments or how much they were decorating it for a specific show aesthetic, but either way, I adore it. It's beautiful. And what I love too about Season 2, much more than Season 1, is that it really, really allows its characters to be silent. You know, I struggle to think of another show that, first of all, allows its characters to just sit with an emotion for an almost unbearably long time, but which also doesn't lose your interest, you know? Like, I'm sitting there and I'm watching Elizabeth looking at nothing for like 20 seconds and I don't look away. You know, that is an accomplishment. And with television, like the sound of television in general is getting louder and worse. That was really great. So the production value is A+. And I'm really going to miss Claire Foy's Elizabeth because this is her final season. I think she's just does such a wonderful job. And I think it was very interesting this season because her arc is basically that she is, you know, the Elizabeth now is no longer rising to quote unquote power or the throne, I guess. She is sitting there and she is proving, you know, to be lacking in a way based on what the people want her to be. She's a very private person. She doesn't want to share herself. She's not exciting to people. She, you know, a lot of things are happening politically around the world. Her power is diminishing. She is diminishing. And the weird thing watching it is that Claire Foy is not diminishing. You know, Claire Foy is not unrelatable or boring or anything like that. And, you know, because it's actual history, obviously, they don't necessarily have to convince us because, you know, we know that what we see and what the public sees is not the same. But I feel like The Crown's, it's weird. There is a weird disconnect that we are being told that she's losing public favor, but she has the audience favor 100% of the time. And I think that is weird to watch it like that. But I guess it's tough because you can't make your main character uninteresting. And I don't think the real Elizabeth ever was. You know, she's a real human being and they're presenting these people as real human beings. And then it's one thing that I guess is a criticism is that, you know, in season one, they had a clear story structure because they were chronicling her rise to power. This is kind of a transitional year. And they also lost some of their absolutely most engaging characters. Harris as the king and John Lithgow as Churchill were so engaging and fantastic. And you feel the loss of them because I don't think there's anyone coming in to take their place. I think that, you know, Matt Smith, it's almost like a Prince Philip-centric season, this one. It's very Matt Smith-heavy and it's very Philip-heavy and almost too much. And I think he's great, but I don't necessarily, I would much rather, like, you know, you get a whole episode of flashbacks to his youth. And I'm thinking, well, where is that episode for Elizabeth's youth? We know there's a lot they haven't covered yet. So why give it to Philip? Anyway, that was frustrating. There's some great newcomers, though. I think Matthew Good as Margaret. Margaret is great, as always. She's wonderful. And her new love interest, Matthew Good, comes in and he does such a great job. And he looks so much like young Captain America. It is very distracting. I dare you guys not to notice that because it's weird, but good. So yeah, I guess my sort of overall takeaway, I'm sorry I'm rambling now, I'm going to try to stop now, but I think it's great. And I think Claire Foy is fantastic. And I think they tell some really interesting stories based on the fact you can feel like they have a few crutches. You know, you feel like they've lost their natural structure and they've lost their most enigmatic side characters. And I think the show does struggle for that, but I think it makes up for it in other ways. And I will say that I don't think the Kennedys worked very well. That episode did not work for me, but I will be interested to hear what other reviewers have to say. And there's an absolutely wonderful sequence when there's a specific part of Elizabeth's reign. It's one of her rare victories as queen in one of the African nations that she's beginning to lose her grasp on, and it's great. And the end. I can't wait for you to watch it.
I know, I need to make time.
Yeah, it time does. It is not my so friend. Wonderful. Like I usually, I'm like when I'm watching something that I know I have to watch a lot of it, and I'm like not expecting to be like necessarily super entertained. I'll sit and like look at my phone or like have a magazine or something. I could not look away from the screen for this. It's really visually captivating.
I will say that's how I felt too with the first season. I wasn't really sure how attention grasping it was going to be.
Yeah.
But even if like, you know, you're covering dense dialogue or whatever, it's like you were saying, the scenery and the sets and stuff like that are so beautiful that you can't look away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
exactly.
There's so much to kind of pay attention to.
Yeah. All right, moving on to listener feedback. We have a couple of tweets. I'll just get the first one here from Kelly. Oh my gosh. From Shelley, who says, "The Book of Dust was so great. No need to reread. You'll be immersed in the world right away. Also, Michael Sheen's narration is amazing in the audiobook." Good to know. Thank you so much. We did ask for that last week, so thanks for coming through for us.
Amy Lynn Craig says, "A while back, you guys talked about the Selection series. I just finished the book a few weeks ago and loved it. Thanks for the rec." Glad you liked it. We really liked that series.
It's good. Yeah. It's like candy in book form. And Jessica says, "I'm so excited for the Merlin special. It's going to be my first complete watch. Hope you do a 2-episode or 5-episode discussion." Well, Jessica, what if we want to do a 3-episode discussion? I'm kidding.
That's good to know that she's down for our weird little thing. So,
yes.
Rachel says, "Started Stranger Things and Girl Meets World this week based on your recs. Alternated between a dark show and a lighthearted one." That's a good way to do it.
That is a good way to do
it. I'm so glad that you're enjoying both of these, but also Girl Meets World, because I've waxed poetic about how adorable I think that show is and how great it is. I'm glad you like it.
In a way, you know, Stranger Things is also a story about a girl who meets a world.
We're all connected.
Yes. Kathleen Anderson says, "Just saw Coco Pixar and I loved it. Question for Pam, what did they do before there were photographs?"
Ooh, so I tweeted Kathleen back about this and I told her that I would give my response on the show just in case anybody else was curious, because I asked my grandma about this after we had seen the movie together. And first of all, I should say that the photograph, like, they have to have... They did a lot of, like, they did a good job in terms of explaining the basic traditions of Día de Muertos or Día de los Muertos in Coco. But for the sake of telling a story, like, you have to make up certain rules that, you know, for these two worlds that they've got, because, you know, it's still like a... It's still a fictitious story that has to take place on the Day of the Dead. So it's not like your ancestors can't come back and visit you if... you don't have photographs. And actually what my grandma was explaining to me is that, you know, Mexico, like the United States, is a country that's comprised of different states. So each state kind of has a different way that they do things, or like even like town to town. So for Coco, they visited the Oaxaca to do their field research and stuff like that. And I think that that was actually really smart, because they're actually very close to the Yucatan, and the honoring of the dead and inviting them to come back on this one night every year is actually something that started with the Aztecs. So for a while, it was actually considered a pagan ritual, especially when Catholicism and Christianity and stuff like that started kind of migrating through the country of Mexico. So it wasn't always considered to be like a holiday that everybody should celebrate. After some few hundred years and stuff like that, it became like a universally, I think it's technically like a national holiday for Mexico, regardless of whether people do it for religious reasons or just like to remember those that have passed on. But it does have a lot of religious connotations still. So where my grandpa's from, he's from a state called Sonora, his family's close to from a town close to a bigger city called Hermosillo. And they, very much like in Coco, you know, go and visit the grave sites of those that have died. And a lot of it just has to do with like cleaning off that person's grave and just like, you know, physically being there with them in the place where they are. And in my grandma's case, she is actually from a town called La Piedad, which is located in the state of Michoacán, and then later spent a lot of time in Mexico City, which is the capital of Mexico. And they have, like, her grandma used to put up an ofrenda, which is like the altar that you see in all of the trailers or in the movie, very similar to Miguel's grandmother in Coco. So it looks like a tree, and my grandma was telling me, it's like, this is so funny. She was saying that her grandma would put the people that she liked best up at the top. So it wasn't like a family tree that starts from like your earliest ancestors onwards. She would just like put the people that are most important to her up at the top, and then start going down and down and down further from that, and then decorate like the sides with flowers and candles and things like that. And so they would go to the grave sites, like, or to the pantheons or whatever, to visit those relatives. But a lot of the celebrations were had later at home. It wasn't like they would celebrate all day there in the cemeteries like they do in Coco. And so, yeah, so she says that it's more about like the feeling and the act of remembering, and also not necessarily just remembering like your relatives and the people you know, but also just ruminating on anybody who's passed. So she said that like she has vivid memories of when she was a child, her grandma taking her to the cemetery so they could clean the graves of their relatives and put flowers down. And she says anytime her grandma would see a grave that was like by itself, she would tell my grandma, she goes, why don't you take some of these flowers and go clean that grave and put them on there, because you know, that poor person doesn't have anybody to remember them, but like we can still honor them in our own little way. So yeah, it's about like, yeah. So I don't know. That's like a long-winded answer to your question and a little bit more history than you probably wanted, but that's what she said.
Wow. That's wonderful. That's really great. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I see we have one more tweet. I'll just get this one from Kelpie. She says, if you get the chance, watch the BBC documentary Harry Potter, The History of Magic, which accompanies the exhibition at the British Library. It's fascinating and spellbinding. It's on BBC Player and YouTube. I did not realize that this was out. I absolutely will watch it.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking the same thing. I saw this when we were in the middle of our show, and I was like, I'm going to squeeze this in at the end because that sounds like a fun watch.
For sure. Okay, so moving on to emails now. I just wanted to give your voice a little bit of a break before you get this wonderful email.
Thank you. I appreciate that. There was like, Grandma had a lot to say, and I learned a lot. And I was like, yeah, this is really interesting. I hope that someone else finds it interesting. So there you go.
For sure. Yeah. But now Hannah has a lot to say as well.
Yeah. All right. We have an email here from Hannah who says, hi, everyone at Hype. My name's Hannah, and I'm a listener from the UK. Hello from over the pond. It's my first time writing to you. However, I have been listening to you all for several years now, including Buffy's Rewatchable, Mugglecast, and even a Twilight podcast. Aw, that's cute. Even Impress. A Twilight podcast when Andrew was involved.
And Pam.
Yeah, that's right. It's my first ever podcast. That warms my heart. Hannah continues, being a Brit, I'm also very excited about your upcoming Merlin talks. I work as a nanny housekeeper, so listening to you is a wonderful way to make organizing and cooking even more enjoyable when the kids are at school. Just wanted to say how much I enjoyed your 168 podcast, and especially wanted to mention the coverage of Agatha Christie's topic. I recently went to see New Murder on the Orient Express with my boyfriend and parents, and we had a brilliant time. We all thought Michelle Pfeiffer in particular was fascinating and very moving. I will, however, say that while the new version is beautiful, excellently cast, and very glamorous, I feel that the earlier version starring Albert Finney and Sean Connery from 1974 is still the superior film. Creepy, atmospheric, and deliciously dark. I would highly recommend to any listeners thinking of starting with Agatha Christie stories to give that one a go first. The casts are also quite incredible. Having said all of that, I'm delighted that Death on the Nile has been greenlit and would be equally happy if Kenneth Branagh was involved again. We Brits absolutely love a murder mystery story, so do follow my lead and pick up her books or watch some film versions, as Agatha Christie is very loved here in the UK. Thanks for all the great fun you ladies, and I think she meant, and Kyle.
Maybe.
Provide.
Neither of them are here.
Yeah.
We'll let them know. Mitch too.
Keep up the work. All the very best. Hannah, 30 from London. That was a really nice
Thank you, Hannah. And thanks from Mitch.
And thanks from Mitch.
He's a rewatchable. Maybe that's
maybe what that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's wonderful. Thank you so much for the feedback on Agatha Christie. And Yeah, I know she's huge in the UK. My mother is actually a big fan. I didn't say this last time. She has like all of the books and she reads them all. She's like obsessed with murder mysteries. I never really got into them myself. But yeah, we do have the books if I ever want to. So Fernanda Torres also sent us an email. She says, hello, girls. Huge, huge Agatha Christie fan here. Yay, another one. I must have read over 30 of her books. Unfortunately, I cannot give you girls any feedback regarding Murder on the Orient Express yet because the movie still hasn't premiered here in Brazil. I feel you, Fernanda. I love the 1974 version and it has great sentimental value for me, so I doubt I'll like this one more. Oh, is that the same one that Hannah recommended? Oh, wow. These emails are amazing. Anyway, Fernanda continues. The trailer for this one seemed very over the top, to be honest. Plus, the original cast had Lauren Bacall, Sean Connery, Ingrid Bergman, Anthony Perkins, and Vanessa Redgrave, among others. Though the new cast is amazing too, except for Johnny Depp, of course. So I guess it's a tie. I still think Kenneth Branagh seems like an absurd choice for Hercule Poirot. Not convinced, but I'll get back to you when I've watched it. Anyway, it looks like the next book adapted will be Death on the Nile, which is a great story too and has also been turned into a movie in the 1970s. Though in this one, Peter Ustinov plays Poirot and I don't like him for this part either. But I hope it's successful, good, and does not involve Johnny Depp again. I also hope they make Miss Marple movies too, just not just Poirot. She is amazing. Other things, can't wait to watch Coco, looking forward to hearing Pam's feedback on it also, but it hasn't opened here in Brazil yet either. Arg! Fun fact, like it happened with Moana in some countries, Coco had to have its title changed in Brazil to Viva, because Coco in Portuguese actually means poop. Please catch up with Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. The last two episodes were amazing. And last but not least, patiently waiting for your sign to start watching Merlin. Lots of love. Fernanda.
That's so funny about the title. But, you know, and there's a line in Coco where they're, this is not a spoiler, but, and you won't catch it unless you know Spanish, so I don't feel bad about saying this, but when they're crossing over the Marigold Bridge to like get into the land of the dead for the first time, one of Miguel's relatives points out the alebrijes, which are like the magical spirit animals. And he says, oh yeah, like they're very pretty, but watch out because they leave lots of cacas everywhere. And, oh. And caca is, a, you know, like,
I know that I think one.
Everybody knows. Yeah. Yeah. That's so it's funny because I would have never correlated that, but it's very similar to Coco, which look at that. Look at all these little.
That's funny.
Anyway, it's really cool.
Yes.
That's funny.
And you can get the last email. Huh? Short and sweet.
Yeah,
you can get the
short
last
and sweet
one.
From Terry. Terry says, hi, Bubble. With all the recent TV reboots, I haven't heard you mention the show Psych. It's my all-time favorite TV show, and it's coming back on the 7th of December with a two-hour TV movie and hopefully more in the future. It's on the USA channel. Just wanted to let you know if you were fans or not. Oh, just wanted to know if you were fans or not, Terry.
I never watched Psych.
I have only seen, like, episodes of Psych. My brother's a huge fan, but so I've never seen the whole show in full, but kind of like Monk, I feel like I just like hop into Psych whenever it's on, but don't like, you know, I've never fully followed a season.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense because it's, you know, it's like kind of like investigative shows.
Yeah.
Like procedurals, I guess. Like, but it's not. I know that there's more to Psych, and I know a lot of people really love it.
Kind of like along the lines of like stuff like Bones, or is it more like Dexter? Or?
I think kind of like more like Dex. It's kind of a little comical because the reason it's called Psych is because one of the guys is psychic. So
yeah.
But it is like it's funny. It's like kind of like comical criminal investigation. But yeah, I mean, I know that like there are a few fans on Hypeable of Psych, so I wouldn't be surprised if we have a few things coming up on the site for that. But I don't think either of us are,
no,
clearly.
But I hope you like the TV, the movie, though.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let us know. So that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. If you guys would like to write in as well, you can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr at hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com. And if you want to, check out our Patreon. That is on patreon.com/hypepodcast. If you subscribe with $2 a month, you get a weekly bonus segment, weekly videos, some Merlin bonus content when we get that far, and more. This week's bonus topic is going to be an extended discussion of Avengers Infinity War. Have a wonderful week, everyone. We'll see you back here for episode 170. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Goodbye.